thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
Welcome to the
Thank
show.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah, awesome to have the chance to chat to you. And so funny, like, this is typical Northern Ireland. Like, I was out with a fella last night, great guy called James. We were out for dinner. And he's like, oh, you know, what are you doing tomorrow? Who are you speaking to tomorrow? And I was like, well, it's the Europa's 50th birthday. I'm speaking to Martin, the head concierge. And he goes, Martin! And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he goes, Martin from Europa. And I was like, yeah, yeah. He goes, tell him to ask, does he know who Conor O'Donnell is down in Dublin? And ask him about the Glazed Doors. So tell me, what is the Glazed Doors? I'd never heard of it before until James mentioned it. And then lo and behold, I discovered that you're the president of it. So let's hear it.
Yeah. So the Glazed Doors is an international organization spread over 54 countries of basically head concierge.
Wow.
You know, if you think of all the landmark hotels around the world, we're represented with the golden keys. You'll see the keys on the lapel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a prestigious thing.
Yeah.
And I became president of the Irish section first in 2010, and I did two terms until 2014, and then I was re-elected again last year for another term. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like a network of head concierges. You all have a badge. That's
pretty we have the keys. It's Clé d'Or is golden keys.
Cool.
So we have the keys on our lapels, and that's how you identify them. And yeah, it's a network. You know, we have guests. We have international guests traveling around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So this lets us contact our colleagues, you know, if we have a guest going to Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
I can pick up the phone or send an email to one of my colleagues in Hong Kong, and they can arrange the seamless journey onwards. So
wow.
It's just that the motto is service through friendship, and that's
yeah.
exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Now, there's also a very nice social side to it.
Okay, tell me.
If you think we're all 4 and 5 star hotels, you know, yeah. we all work with very prestigious guest suppliers.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have a congress every year. So I've been to Canada. I'm just back from Qatar 2 weeks ago.
Unbelievable.
We've been to the States, Argentina, all over Europe. And these are just get-togethers. And there's a really nice social aspect to it as well.
Cool. And I lived in Manhattan for a while, and I was friends with a few concierges. And we would always love when we were going out with the concierges, because they always knew the best places, but they always got something thrown in for free.
Well, this is it. You know, as service suppliers, you know, we work very closely with the restaurants
yeah.
and limousine companies and things like that. So, you know, it works to our advantage. You know, we send them business, they look after us.
Yeah.
So it's a nice perk for
it
the
is.
Job. Yeah.
But, you know, you would have, I assume you would go to like a lot of different events and try new places. And, you know, part of your job is knowing where's good and what's good.
Well, this is it. And it's funny, Belfast was probably a wee bit behind the times. If you think somewhere like London or possibly even Dublin, a new restaurant opens, the first thing they do, they'll invite the Clédor members in.
Mm.
You know, you can only recommend somewhere properly if you've experienced it.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. That's what the savvy restaurant owners do, or the savvy, the likes of Titanic and that. You know, if you're opening a new exhibition, you want the people who are going to recommend it to the guests to know what it's about and experience it. So they come to us first. We get the experience, and then we tell our guests
yeah.
and sell it to them.
It's class. I was trying to really think about, you know, the work that you do and the environment and the industry and everything. And it really just hit me. We just did an episode about influencers,
mm-hmm.
someone who runs like an influencer agency. And I was really thinking, I was like, dude, like concierges are like the original influencers. You know what I mean? Like, before Instagram, before everything, like they were the people that you brought in because they were the gatekeepers to the city. You know, they were the path that could show visitors, whether local or international, of this is how you unlock the best parts of this city, you know?
Well, this is it. We have, for each section, so the Irish section, we would have what we call associates. So it's the service providers, so the likes of the coach companies, the limousine companies, restaurants, pubs, attractions. So they become associate members of us. And basically what they have then is they have a salesman in the foyer of a hotel, which is, you know, got thousands and thousands of guests coming through, and they have a salesman there selling their product.
Mm.
So that's the benefit of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I get exactly what you're saying about the influencer. That's what we do. We channel them to certain places that we know, that we've experienced, and we know, you know, we're only as good That old saying, you're only as good as your last recommendation. Yeah?
Yeah, there's a lot riding on your recommendation.
Oh, absolutely.
If someone doesn't have a good time,
well, this is
they're going to be annoyed at you.
If we send someone to a restaurant and they have a stinker, you know, that they're not going to come back and ask me the next day, what should we be
where
doing?
Where tonight, Martin?
You know? So it's very important that we work closely with the associates and we know what they're about and we know what their ethics are and you know, how they perform. And that's important, and we build up those relationships, and it works really well.
Yeah. I was chatting to James last night. You know, his dad is a concierge at a big hotel in Dublin, and we were saying how, you know, the value of what you guys do is immeasurable, and the knowledge that you guys have is so deep. But, and I mean this with the utmost respect, it's something that people are quick to try to outsource to something like a TripAdvisor or a Google or some sort of technology, and they miss so much by doing so.
Yeah.
And what you get, what you can bring is you can bring that real personal, real trustworthy recommendation, but you can bring a story to it. You can bring a real quality recommendation of what to order on the menu. And I, you know, I think a lot of hotels and a lot of the guest experience, they miss out by not having someone like you there.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. I mean, you'll find that mostly we're situated in 4 and 5 star hotels.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember, I'm old enough, and I don't mind admitting this, I'm pre-internet.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Was there ever such a time?
Yeah, was there ever
Tell
such a time?
Tell me about it.
So I remember, you know, we didn't just Google anything, but we had to have everything to hand. Mm. We had all the phone numbers to hand. We memorized most of them. And we knew all the restaurants and the details and things like that. And then when internet came along, everybody was going, oh, so that's the end of concierge then, because you can just do it yourself. But it's probably even made us stronger, because people want that personal experience. Mm. And we've seen that before. We, you know, a lot of years ago, we put in the system called Monsierge.
Okay.
And it was like an information board in the foyer of the hotel. And it was to subsidize what we do. It let guests have a look at restaurants and tours and things like that. And it gathered dust and sat in the corner, and kids played with it. And no one really paid any attention to it. They just kept coming back to the concierge.
Yeah.
Because we can tell them, you know, what it smells like, where's the best table in the restaurant to get, you know, we can make the phone call and get the table when the restaurant's full.
Yeah.
So we can do things like that. And that's the value of it.
Yeah, totally. And like, especially an international visitor, and this is maybe more so than previous points in history, like they really want the quote unquote umbrella term of the authentic experience.
Absolutely.
And the other part to it as well, James and I were saying, is like, you know, I'm a high-end client. I'm coming in. I'm staying in a 4 or 5 star hotel. I maybe also don't want to spend 3 hours planning my trip. I maybe want to be able to go to somebody and say, hey, I'm outsourcing a lot of this decision-making to you, and I trust you. And that is a really valuable service in itself.
And it's funny. It's very accurate what you're saying there, because when you have the high-end guests, they're the ones that really utilize the concierge service.
Mm.
They know it. They know the value of it. They know it saves them time, and they know they get the right recommendations.
Yeah.
Guest expectations now, you know, if you're going back to when I started in 83, it's a different level altogether.
What do you mean?
People expect, you know, back then, sort of anything would do.
Okay,
you know,
right,
you're going into this hotel and wow, you know, you're in the hotel.
Yeah.
Now people's expectations are way up there. People travel so much more now.
Mm.
They have those experience of 4 and 5 star hotels. So it's not good enough just to have, you know, the swanky foyer and the nice Egyptian cotton beds and stuff like that. You need to back it up with the service.
Yeah.
That's really, really important.
Yeah. Yeah, and I you know, just when you were saying that, I just kind of like saw in my head, it's like, oh my word, yeah, you're right. Like, because people are traveling so much, and particularly a certain clientele, you know, your hotel is no longer competing with the other hotels in Belfast. Your hotel is competing with every single hotel on the planet.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
Crazy.
Absolutely.
Really crazy. So 83.
83.
How did you get into it? What were you doing before?
I came straight out of school.
Really?
Yeah. And I had a relative working in the hotel, and I really had no idea what I was going to do. And I was just sort of, you know, ambling by.
Sure.
And he said to me, listen, there's a couple of positions going. Do you want to give it a shot and maybe, you know, maybe give it 6 months? Yeah. So I thought, ah, okay, we'll go and see. So I
mean, 16 or 18?
18.
Class.
And the first time I stood behind the desk, that was it. It was just, I thought, this is okay. I can get this snotty-nosed kid from West Belfast, you know, suddenly standing in this big international hotel surrounded by all sorts of accents and, you know, and the buzz of the place was just incredible and it's really infectious and I just thought, that's okay. So,
and like you said, the prestige.
Yeah.
Particularly at that time.
Well, at that time.
Your experience of the world, like every, like the same way Standard has increased in every hotel. Standard's increasing. You can't go into a coffee shop now or a restaurant and it's not like 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
Everything's so heightened.
Yeah.
But you know, like even in my lifetime, like I remember like, you know, 90s, early 2000s, like going to places and they were just all right. And all right was enough.
And that was acceptable.
Yeah, it was acceptable, yeah. So you were born and bred West then?
West Belfast, yeah.
Love.
Yeah.
And like what sort of things were you into when you were growing up?
Oh, music was big for me, yeah, yeah. It had always had been in the family. And I just, my brothers played guitar, so I took up guitar.
Yeah,
ended
up
playing on a band.
sweet.
Bass.
What genre was your band?
Oh, we were, you know, sort of wedding singer type thing,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's great. I love that.
But it was great. We were in the TSB Rock School finals and, you know, it was really good. But then when I got the job and I got full time and I thought, what do you got to do here?
Yeah.
You got to make a decision, sure, yeah. You know. So, yeah.
So talk to me about, you know, I said at the top, you know, Europa turns 50. Really now. I don't know what month, but this year.
Well, it would have been actually July, believe it or not. Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah.
And you came in at 83. Like, what was the Europa that you walked into in 83? How does it differ from what we know today?
From today? Well, massively different.
Really?
I mean, Belfast, even the city was so different. You don't have the tourism infrastructure that you have now. There were no city sightseeing tours. There were no giant causeway tours. There were maybe two restaurants in the town that you would recommend.
No way.
Honestly.
What were they?
Restaurant 44, actually, in Bedford Street.
Okay, yeah.
Which sticks in my mind. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Paul Rankin opened just
In
the very early, the mid-80s.
Yeah.
And there were only like two restaurants that you would recommend. But at that time, our clientele was pretty much predominantly press.
Yeah.
Over covering the troubles.
Yeah.
You know, Belfast wasn't a destination to come in.
Yeah, it was, you know, not a postcard city.
No, it really wasn't. And if you think of Belfast in 83, you know, it's a pretty dark place, you know. Our clientele, as I say, were basically press from around the world.
Mm.
And we had permanent offices for CNN, ABC, ITN. They all had permanent offices. Also the newspapers like the London Times, Guardian, Irish Times, they all had permanent offices in the hotel.
Crazy.
So it was all press you were dealing with. And we built up really great relations with them because they were there constantly.
Yeah. It's a really ignorant question. I'm showing my age, okay, so apologies. Was the gate up around the city still?
It was.
My goodness.
It was. The gates were up around the city and the gate was up around the hotel as well.
Really?
There was actually a security fence around the hotel and a security hut that every single guest had to go through and had their luggage searched before they could get into the hotel.
It's mad.
Now, it wasn't really effective because the hotel was bombed 33 times.
I mean, I needed you to say that, not so, Martin.
So you gotta balance that up.
Sure.
But, strange times.
Was there any kind of hesitation for you, you know, 18, from yourself or your family, of like Martin going to work in the city centre?
No, I've actually been asked that question a couple of times by press who were doing, you know, interviews and stuff, and they'll go, so what was the attraction to apply for a job in the most bombed building in the world? And I don't have an answer for it. You know,
the opportunity if you was
talk,
there.
Well, if you talk to anyone who lived in Belfast through the Troubles, you know, it was just part of life. You went along with it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Belfast city centre was sort of out of bounds after sort of 6 p.m. No one went into the town. There was nothing to go into town for. But it was, it was a pretty dark place.
That's a really important, I just think out loud in this podcast, so apologies. It's, you know, there's a lot of talk these days, you know, how can we get more people into the city centre? And, you know, why does maybe the city centre struggle to get people at nighttime and stuff? And, you know, it's very hard to get away from the fact that it's just going to take time because there's a big legacy there of people not being in the city centre after a certain time. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean...
But the change you must have seen is remarkable.
Absolutely. I mean, as I say, it was press. And even the press, when they were covering their stories, they would come back late at night. They would all congregate in the bar upstairs. And that would be them sort of cross-cooperating their stories and stuff like that, you know. And there was no sort of... Everybody was hunkered down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't go out into the town unless they got news of another story breaking or a bomb somewhere in the city or a shooting somewhere, and then they would all migrate up to whatever part of the city that happened in.
Yeah.
Now, of course, very, very different. You know, it's international guests, it's tourists.
Yeah.
And it's ironic because probably one of the most popular tours at the minute is the political tour, the black taxi
it
tour.
Is, yeah.
Which goes up to the north and west of the city and does the Peace Wall and the murals, and parts of that are quite dark as well. But there's also an aspect to it that shows how far the city has come on as well, which is really positive, and a lot of guests get that from it as well.
Absolutely. So let's stay here. Like, we're already here, so let's stay kind of like the Troubles in the Europa. Really, really interesting. I'm not sure like many people know this because I know I was completely ignorant to it. Like, the Europa as a, I don't know, a building or an institution or whatever you want to call it, like, it's a pretty important part of the peace process and the Troubles and kind of, as you said, even the, it was like the press arm.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about kind of what the building saw and what you have seen kind of through the 80s, through the 90s.
I think someone used a quote of mine to say that if you're talking about the history of Belfast in the last 50 years, you have to include the Europa.
Wow.
It played such an important role. I mean, when we opened in 71, the Europa was the only international standard hotel. And it stood out head and shoulders.
That's crazy.
There were no Hiltons and no Marriotts and no, you know, Ramadas or anything like that. It was Europa. That was the one.
Wow.
So anybody who was coming to the city stayed at the Europa. And should that be music guests who... You know, a few of them did actually venture during the Troubles here and play in the Ulster Hall and that, but it was always the Europa that they stayed in. As I say, the press, I mean, if you think a lot of the press today, the likes of Trevor MacDonald, Kate Eady, they all cut their journalistic teeth in Belfast.
Crazy.
In the Europa, you know, and there's some fantastic photographs around of them as young journos moving around the hotel and just, you know, doing what they did. But, I mean, as Europa went on, I suppose going on to, I would be standing at my desk, which is right by the front door, and on any given day you could have Ian Paisley coming through one door,
yeah.
And then as he went out, Gerry Adams would come in through another door, and then as he went out, somebody else would come in through.
Yeah.
And this was just regular goings on, you know, and there was so many meetings and things that were never reported, but, you know, just people talking behind doors. And then as that progressed into the peace process, again, the Europa was front and centre.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, who else did you welcome through your doors then as part of that?
I suppose the big one was President Clinton, wasn't it? We had the whole build-up to that was really, really... strange. At the start, the peace process was going on, and it was, will it happen, won't it happen? And then it was President Clinton might come along to endorse it. Then he might stay. Then he might stay in the Europa. I mean, if you think about it, whenever someone heads a state like that, they always stay in Hillsborough Castle.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
Protocol.
That's almost. Protocol. Yeah. And it's for security reasons as well. Clinton chose to stay in the most bombed hotel in the world. That was his endorsement to say that, listen, Belfast is open for business. And he put so much of his own time and effort into that process.
Yeah.
And he's still very well, you know, renowned for it. And plus, after that, himself and Hillary have become a big part of the hotel. They've been back many times. And I've got quite a few mementos of his stays and gifts and stuff like that. So it's... Europa was really front and center to it all.
What's kind of one of the mementos that really stands out for you?
I have a photo, well, obviously my photograph with greeting President Clinton. I was in the official lineup. I also got a letter from the White, which arrived from the White House with the White House postage.
Wow.
Labeled just as a thank you.
Yeah.
From Clinton and signed.
Yeah.
It's really nice. You know, we put a lot into that. But if he was going to stay, he's going to stay in Europa.
Yeah.
You know.
Man, that's crazy. There's been a lot of chat about frontline workers, you know, the last 2 years for good reason. And, you know, just again, whenever you were speaking there, like it just kind of like saw in my head, it's like, oh my goodness, like, you know, Martin was effectively, like, he was a frontline worker, you know, like you're right there in the middle of the troubles, in the middle of the peace process, and you're there at your desk, you're there at the door, and you're kind of seeing it all. But in general, like in your job, like, you know, I think about, like, you know, the women that greeted you here today in Normal Baths. You know, we talk to them all the time of, like, they are the glue that holds this place together. We kind of joke, like, the younger guys, they call it startup mum, Claire, you know. And they are frontline workers, because anything that we need, whether it's a personal crisis, something's happened with a family member, something's happening with business, they are the first point of call that we go to, where it's basically just like help. Or if there's something exciting, you know, a new baby's been born, or we did something amazing over the weekend, they're the first people we tell when we come into work on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
And like your job, your role, you kind of are the first point of contact for guests in all of those situations, good, bad, and ugly. And like I would just love to know, like, or hear a couple of stories of, like, what are some really surprising moments you've had with guests? Has there been any tragic moments you've had with guests? Has there been any really joyful moments? You know, if you look back over your 38 years, like, what are some of the standout encounters you've had with people that you've kind of been caring for?
I mean, you're 100% right. Our desk, most concierge desks are situated right by the front door.
Mm.
So we're the first person you see when you walk in. We're the last person you see when you're leaving.
Yeah, well.
So that impression is really important, you know. And people tend to buy into you, you know. And as I said about recommendations, you know, if you know your stuff and if you know what you're recommending to guests and what, you know, you can almost read what they want.
Mm.
When you can do that, it builds up the trust.
Yeah.
And you find that they invest more and more in you. Americans are probably the best example. They just use the concierge to the nth.
Yeah,
and
they're not shy about it.
No.
Where have we been shy about stuff like that as a culture?
But
the Americans are like, oh, dude, if it's there, I'm going to use it. And I see the value in it as well. You know?
That's entirely it. And where Americans would be more used to, you know, giving it to someone else and saying, listen, I want to do this. How do I do it? Mm. You organize that for me. Probably one of the darkest days. And it's, you know, you don't train for this. If you think of 9/11, we had a lot of American guests in the hotel at that time. So as that was breaking, we had guests sitting down in the bar. We were standing with them, and they were watching this happening on television. And they were from New York, and they're, you know, they're crying. And you can't train for that. That just your own personal empathy and it comes out, and you're talking to them, you're trying to reassure them as much as you can. Mm. And I remember that was a really, really difficult day. And then, of course, those guests, they couldn't move. They couldn't ring home because all the phones were down. They couldn't get flights because all the flights were down. So to work with someone like that in a situation like that is tough. But it's also rewarding because you've done not only your job, but you've done more than your job. Mm-hmm. And as I say, you're not going to find that in any job description, mm-hmm. you know. And then you have just the day-to-day stuff. People coming in, they want roses on the bed and they want petals and they want, you know, the bath filled with goat's milk or whatever. You know, those are the things. Those are the day-to-day things that we do. Probably one of the most unusual things I've ever been asked to do. And it was emotional for the lady, but it was also for me. She confided in me that she'd brought her husband's ashes. Whoa. From America home, not home, but to Ireland,
yeah.
Because he wanted scattered somewhere in Ireland. And she wanted advice on where this could happen.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, that's a real big thing for someone to trust you with.
Yeah.
So we sat down and we had conversations and coffee and we talked about a few locations, and she went to a few locations that I had suggested, and we got the one.
Where was it? Is that okay? That's okay. No, because a couple of my questions, I've been wanting to postscript them with I know you can't give everything away here, and I'm not asking you to give stuff away, you know.
Concierge confidentiality.
You know, it's a strong bond. It's an unbroken code.
It is.
Good. It's very good. Why'd you stay in the job? You know, you're the longest serving member of staff at the Europa, 38 years, from school till now. I mean, I imagine you don't have plans to jump ship at this stage.
waiting for something better to come along. It's one of those places. I mean, we're very fortunate. We had lots of long-term staff. Carolyn was there for 20 years. Alan, our maintenance manager, has been there for 25 years. Our HR manager has been there for almost 30 years.
Wow.
You know, there's a real bond there, but it's such a great place to work. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, it's not even like work. It's not, you know, yeah. It never has been. I really enjoy the day-to-day. There's some mundane stuff that you have to do that's done.
Sure.
But you're dealing with individual personalities, and none of them are the same. And it's how you react to them and how they react to you. And I love that buzz. I remember the first time, you know, standing behind the desk and someone asked me a simple question, you know, where's City Hall? Mm. And I directed them around. They went, oh, that's really good. Thanks very much. And you get that wee buzz, you know, helping a complete stranger.
Yeah.
And then you just take that to another level and another level. And that's what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
But it's compelling.
Yeah, it is compelling. Do you have any people that have been coming for like decades and decades?
Oh yeah, we have a lot. I mean, journalists today, we still get the likes of Peter Taylor from BBC, John Ware from BBC. They still come back to the hotel. So Trevor MacDonald was involved in our anniversary celebrations. They have a real connection to the hotel and don't mind when they're asked to come back and give, you know, their stories and how they're connected to the hotel and what it means to them. And it's lovely to see. Mm-hmm. But for, you know, they've been coming since before I was there.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, and like, you know, it was their home away from home.
That's exactly it.
Know? And the regular staff that they see is their uncle away from home, or their brother away from home, or their dad away from home, or, you know, whatever it is. So it's cool.
But we have that connection as well, because we have staff who've been there so long, and we have guests who have been there, who regularly stay with us. You know, we've loads and loads of regular guests. And they know that when they come through the door, they know that Martin's going to be at the desk, or, you know, Linda's going to be over at reception, or, you know, and that's nice. That familiarity,
yeah.
A lot of people really enjoy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's something so powerful about consistently showing up in people's lives. You know?
And then, of course, you have, they know that you know what they want.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's really strange. We quirk. I can remember newspaper orders for guests that stayed with us 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Really? Regular guests, yeah, it's incredible. Because you know what they want. So when they come back next time, you just go, so it'll be a Daily Mirror and a Sporting Life. And they go, yeah, certainly. Mirror. Thank you. And that's what it is.
Is there anything in the city that you think is missing? So I'll fill that out a wee bit for you. Like, are there any gaps, say, even from like a restaurant perspective, where someone comes and they're like, oh, I'm really, really in the mood for, say, Japanese food.
Yeah.
Or I'm really in the mood for Nepalese food, right? Like, is there anything that you see that like – people are asking for that doesn't exist?
I mean, again, going back to where we were in 83 whenever I was there, and going to where we are now, taking COVID out of the way, it has affected a lot of restaurants. There is so much more choice.
Mm.
And if you're able to give people a choice, you can steer them to somewhere. You know, it's not going to be that they'll ask for a specific type of cuisine, and if it's not there, they're not going to eat.
Yeah, they're going to fast. Yeah, tear their hair out.
So the key there is to, you know, so what would you like? Okay, so maybe we don't have Nepalese, but, Thai, we're a really good Thai restaurant. Okay, so what? And then you tell them about that, and we show them a menu, and you can guide people that way, and then they don't feel cheated, or they don't feel, and they forget about their original idea.
Yeah,
and it's seamless then, you know. But that comes from practice.
That's cool. No, it is, and it's part of the art of what you do. You
yeah, know, but well. Sure. I mean, obviously, cuisine-wise in Belfast, you know, it's a different story. It's getting better and better. Hopefully, post-COVID, we'll get back to some sort of normality where the restaurants are open again and back up to full strength.
Somewhere I'd love to go as well is, you know, like by meeting you today and like and even hearing what you've been saying, like you clearly love your job. Like that's not up for debate. You, and you know, feel free to correct this. Like it seems like you're one of the few people where you're, it's less of a job and more of a vocation or more of a lifestyle or more of, it's part of your life rather than a go in, a clock out, and then that's me done. Thank goodness it's a weekend. Nah, I don't need to think about work, you know. Talk to me about your own personal experience of COVID and lockdowns and really like having your work taken away from you.
Yeah.
Like you're clearly a social guy. Like how did that hit you? Because you were closed for, I mean,
18 months pretty much for the full duration. And it's so strange because the Europa is such a weird building when there's no one in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a buzz about it. It doesn't even matter if it's 4 o'clock in the morning. There's something happening. There's something going on. So when we closed the doors, certainly in my 38 years, this was unprecedented. I'd never seen anything like that. And it was a slow build because it took time to actually work out what was actually happening here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was the 23rd of March, in 2020, that was our last day, and it was like, just close the doors and go.
It's like seeing Times Square empty. It's not supposed to happen.
It's not supposed to happen, exactly. So I remember sitting at home, and it was locked down. You weren't supposed to leave. And I'd been getting up in the morning and going to work for the last 38 years,
yeah.
And suddenly that's not happening. And it's like, where is this going to go? What is this, you know, what is this thing? And I think ultimately, I know there were, you know, other industries, certainly the healthcare industry and our healthcare, and that were really hit bad. But hospitality was just,
it's desecrated.
Absolutely. And everything with COVID goes against what hospitality is. You know, don't mix.
Yeah.
Don't go out.
Don't share.
Don't share. Don't be in the same room. Don't hug. Don't shake hands. Even the face masks now, which we wear today, you know, the first thing I'll do when someone comes through the door is smile,
mm-hmm.
before we start a conversation, so they know then that they're, you know, in a friendly environment.
Yeah.
They don't see that now. You know, the face mask is on. So everything to do with COVID was anti-hospitality.
Yeah.
And it might take a long time for it to build back up again. It's a strange time.
Well, you know yourself, like, if you remember back whenever we all kind of came out of lockdown, I would often joke with people, you know, like what we're doing now, it's like conversational tennis. There's a back and forward, and it's like music. There's like pauses and rests, and you know when to come in, and you know when, you know, the timing of your laugh, you know, there's a bit of a rhythm to it. I remember like coming out of lockdown, like I spent a living talking to people, so I still was podcasting the way through it. But like even with my mates, there was like, we didn't know how to do the rhythm again. You know, we didn't know how to do the dance. Or you know yourself with you know, your extended friendship group. You go even now, it's like, do I give them a handshake? And there's that sort of, you go in and then you pull back. And so, you know, it is going to take time to kind of like figure out what the future is. What I would love to know is there any aspect of this that has made hospitality or your specific role as a concierge or the Europa, like, more resilient, better? Have you learned something that ultimately, when we look back at this in, God willing, a couple of years' time, that the experience will be elevated because of it?
I think for those of us that have stuck through it, as I said previously, when guests come in, you have that smile on that makes that connection. You don't have that now, so you have to work a wee bit harder. You know, you really have to think about what you're doing. So You're exaggerating your eye movements and things like that. I know this sounds
weird. No, but
weird,
it's so true, yeah.
You know, you're trying to make yourself open for guests coming through. And as you say, you know, something as simple as a handshake and that, and now you're well, a fist pump or elbow or what I do, you know.
Do we kick shoes?
It just makes things awkward to start off with.
Yeah.
I think it makes you work harder.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas previously, you know, I don't know, I wouldn't say we're complacent about what we were doing, but I think there are the barriers that are there now. You have to work a wee bit harder just to get past.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us that have stayed on, for those of us who've been there as long as I have, certainly I'd appreciate whenever we get back to normal. I'll appreciate shaking someone's hand and being able to smile at them and speak openly with them. You know, it'll mean a lot to me.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have to go here. I don't even know if you're allowed to go here. Just in my head, though, like, I don't even know how old you are. You don't need to tell me. Is retirement on the cards? Are you thinking about retirement, or is that way, way, way? And the reason why I ask is important. Is your job something that, like, you have to start, like, training a predecessor, like, a long time in advance to kind of take over the keys, as it were?
Yeah.
Or, you know, is it different the way that works? Again, if this is a dead end, we can just...
No. I'm happy to say I'm 56 years old.
Hey!
there you go. And proud. What we have, what we're very fortunate to have, particularly with the concierge, they're almost called career concierge.
Okay.
I mean, I had colleagues that worked in the Shelbourne in Dublin. The head concierge was Jimmy Dixon. He was there for 51 years. His deputy was there for 48 years.
My goodness.
And one of the junior concierges was there for 30-odd years. So, you know, they were there for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And if you look at concierges around the world, and it's particularly Clyde-Dor concierges, 30, 40 years is not, it's not unusual.
Yeah, you're just getting into your prime now.
yeah, you know, and it's one of those jobs, as you get older, you should get better at it. You know, because you're building up those banks of knowledge and the banks of experience and connections. And I've certainly found that the longer I'm there, the more I connect with people, the more I know, the more the guests benefit from it.
Yeah.
So as I get older, at the minute, I'm not thinking of retiring.
Sure, yeah.
You know, if six numbers come up tonight, then you never know. But it might change tack on that. But I still enjoy what I do.
Yeah.
I enjoy working on behalf of the guests to make myself better, that I can provide the service for them. And age doesn't, for concierge, age doesn't really, it's not really a factor.
So the reason why I brought it up is because, you know, fella James was with last night, we were talking about his dad, and he's like, you know, I just don't think my dad will ever retire. Like, my dad loves his job so much, and he loves being part of it so much that, like, I think he'll just keep going as long as he can. And we were saying, you know, how different that is to, like, the majority of the workforce, where it's just like, oh, flip me, I would love a wee severance package at 60. You know what I mean? Or, like, if they pay me off, I just would absolutely love it. And it's amazing that you have found, a career that adds value and meaning to your own life, as well as giving you the opportunity to do the same for the people you ultimately serve.
I actually know Conor O'Connell from Brooks, and he's a fabulous guy. And if you talk to him, if you talk to a lot of the concierges, you get that genuine enjoyment of what they do.
Yeah.
It's very, very rewarding.
Yeah.
Not just financially, of course, but
it's
very rewarding to be able to be in a position to help people.
Yeah.
And then to have that gratitude, genuine gratitude coming back.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I actually apply it. I'm a terrible one for busman's holidays. You know, whenever we go away anywhere, Roisin will go shopping and I'll go and look at hotels. It's terrible. I shouldn't really admit that, but whenever I'm away, how I'm dealt with, I look and go, how would I do that? Would I do that differently? You know, would I have gone as far as they have gone?
Yeah.
You know, and it's you're always picking bits up and looking at bits.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Like, you're talking about a craft. Like, this is like something that you've dedicated your life to. The same way a carpenter or a blacksmith or, you know, a painter.
Oh, yeah.
Always improving, always looking for ways. Going to art galleries to see, oh, what type of brushstroke did that fella use? I wonder if I could use that in my own work.
Well, I haven't learned it all, by no means.
Yeah.
And I still, whenever I go away, I still pick up little bits and bobs.
I love that.
You know, I remember just things that just stick in your mind. I was in Dubai and we were checking out of the hotel and the girl was fantastic. She was making eye contact and these are the things that just are in your mm-hmm. head. And she said, did you enjoy your stay? And I said, I did. It was wonderful. Thank you. And normally that's the end of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But she then went further and said, is there anything we could have done to make your stay better?
Wow.
And I thought that was just brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, there's just taking it another step further.
Yeah.
And showing that she actually cared about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful. It was really, it just stuck because I hadn't seen that or experienced that mm-hmm. before. And that's something you can take back and you can use yourself.
And again, it's so valuable for your own experience and also so valuable for the business's experience.
Well, what
because there's one thing sending someone a survey in an email. Yeah. And then there's one thing, getting it from the horse's mouth, yeah. for lack of a better term.
Well, what I've found down the years as well is that if I bring something back and start using that, my colleagues start to use it as well because they see the value in it.
It's a culture almost, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and that's a learning process and it's a sharing process and it benefits the whole department, the whole hotel.
You've just unlocked something for me. Like, it explains why you go to some places, whether they're hotels or they're restaurants, and just all the service is terrible. Like, every single part, you know, it's just
yeah.
subpar or it's bad or whatever. And you go to other places and it's all great. It's a culture thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. You learn, you feed off your colleagues.
Yeah.
And as a senior colleague, you have a responsibility. I certainly believe that because how you conduct yourself is how the new kid coming into the department or the new kid coming into the hotel will look at you and go, oh, so that's how you do it.
Mm.
So, you know, if you're given an example, mm. if you're given a good example, not that I walk about, I have to give a good example.
yeah, you're not floating around like a saint, but I get it.
I would feel cheated if I wasn't given my best.
Mm-hmm.
That would upset me. And there are times when whatever you do for someone, you can't get to where they want you to get
yeah.
for whatever reason. And when that happens, it really does put a feeling in you that you haven't achieved what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not nice.
Yeah.
I prefer the buzz of when you've got something
mm-hmm.
and you've taken them to where they wanted to go and you've maybe gone a wee bit further and they're really, really appreciative of it. And that doesn't mean, you know, putting money on the table or
sure.
that could be a real genuine thank you or a handshake or a hug
mm-hmm.
as has happened in occasions
yeah.
and it's that's really, really rewarding and I find that's my buzz.
It's class. Shifting gears and slightly, I always like to land the plane of all these conversations with some stock questions. So these are just questions we've asked every sure. single person, okay? A few biggies, so we'll see how we go. What's the most challenging moment so far? And how are we able to overcome it?
Probably one of the hardest moments was in 1993 when the hotel was attacked. That was the last time the hotel was bombed. Mm. It was bombed in 1991. We spent 2 years renovating the hotel and we got it back to just where we wanted it. And then there was a £500 bomb put at the side of the hotel and it obliterated the building. And the conversation then was that it was just going to knock it down,
yeah.
make it a car park or something.
Yeah.
Now, I'd only been married for a year or so. My daughter had just been born in the June. This happened in the November, I think it was. So all I was seeing was my job, the new mortgage for the house, and
it was
really dark and difficult time. And there were no career opportunities around Belfast at that time, so I was just thinking, my God, where do we go with this?
Yeah.
And then thankfully, Sir William Hastings, seen the value of the Europa and the name and the history and came in and quite literally took the phoenix, you know, and ran with it and made it to what it is today, which is incredible.
Wow.
When you think of where it was, it really was on the precipice of not existing anymore.
Yeah. Wow. That is a great story. This question might get you in trouble, so if we can't answer it, we can cut it. If you could be a head concierge at any other Hastings hotel, which one would you go for? If I put you
in
any...
It's going to get me in trouble.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't want any other hotel. It has to be the Europa. It's the beating heart of the city.
Yeah.
And as I said, you know, down the years, it's played such a pivotal part in Belfast's history.
Yeah.
No, I just too much of a connection to it now. Yeah. I mean, we have some beautiful properties, you know, some gorgeous properties. The Culloden on the shores of Belfast Lough is stunning.
Mm.
Ballygally, just walk out the front door and you're looking into the sea. Gorgeous properties, but I think Europe is definitely the one. I made the right decision.
Love that. Most successful moment so far?
Most successful moment? Personally, it would have been... being elected as president of Clydor of Ireland. I was the first person outside of Dublin in the 60-year history of Clydor in Ireland to become president.
Unbelievable, Martin.
And since then, yeah, it was a great honour. And since then, I've now been made zone director of Western Europe for Clydor. So
epic.
I have 8 countries that are under my remit that I audit and take care of. And travel to, which is very nice part of the...
Yeah, come on. The perks.
The perks. So, on a personal aspect, that would certainly be up there.
Cool. If you could take anyone from Northern Ireland, dead or alive, out for a pint or a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, whatever you prefer, who would you take, where would you take them, and why?
So difficult. You know, I've been really, really fortunate down the years that lots of local artists, actors, footballers, we've become friends.
Sure.
You know, so George Best, Jimmy Ellis, Phil Coulter, you know, we've known each other for 38 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Phil Coulter will tell you, this is the guy, this is the kid that was in the foyer. And he loves to tell that story to the new members of staff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, those guys, just out for a pint. Ryan, Duke of York.
Lovely.
Wee bit of music, Cathedral Quarter.
Yeah.
Bit of atmosphere. And just reminisce.
Yeah.
Which we always did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then really good times, you know.
It's awesome. Final question then, Martin. If you could go back in time to the 18-year-old Martin that was standing behind the desk in the lobby of the Europa Hotel for the first time, what would you say to him if you had a couple of minutes of his time?
That's an excellent question. Stick it out. Stick it out because 38 years down the line, you're not going to regret it.
Mm.
You're not going to look back and go, oh, I should have done something else. I should have been something else. Mm. I've been fortunate because the concierge let me get involved with Clydor.
Mm-hmm.
Clydor has opened up massive doors all around the world for me. The experiences I've been able to have are incredible. I wouldn't have got them in any other walk of life. So I would say to him, just stick it out. You'll be rewarded in the end.
That's awesome, mate. Humour me here, a wee bonus question. What's the kindest thing that someone's ever done for you?
Well, it may sound twee, but I deal with complete strangers every day who've never met me, and they give me their trust. They put, you know, for instance, with someone coming to you and saying, you know, I've got my husband's ashes, I need to scatter them somewhere in Ireland, can you help me?
Mm.
That's a really personal and private thing. they're investing a lot in me, and they're giving me their trust. So I think on a daily basis when that happens, that's good for me.
Incredible. Martin, this has been absolutely unbelievable. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing everything you did.
My pleasure, Matt. Thank you.
Yeah. And good sir, that is a